focus on what has worked and you get really, really smart about what your messaging is and who you target.
Welcome to the Winning E-Commerce Experience Show, where it's all about creating a brand that your customers love so they keep coming back. This show is brought to you by DataQ. Your store experience begins with your homepage. DataQ improves your conversion rate up to 30% by showing each visitor a personalized homepage based on their interest. And now, your host, Shyam Enver.
Hey, everybody. Today, we have the founder of Be Smart Social Media. She joins us today to share her 15 years of experience in social media marketing to help you grow your e-commerce business. Ladies and gentlemen, Julie B.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Julie. Great to have you with us. So I guess it's kind of a really crazy time for everybody in business. I guess, you know, with all this great stuff going on, how are you dealing with it as a business? Like, what are you telling your clients?
Yeah, I mean, you know, internally, it's just kind of day by day. Sometimes it's hour by hour every day. And I think that it's really important to, you know, try to find things to work on internally to kind of better your business and keep moving forward, even though we're certainly operating in some very uncertain times right now. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to, you know, have some things to focus on. And so with our clients, we started actually reaching out to them. We were kind of monitoring this, and honestly, the first week of March, which is probably about a week and a half before most other businesses really, I think, started paying a lot of attention to this. But mm-hmm. That first week of March, we were monitoring it, and we decided internally with my staff that this was definitely going to be, you know, there were going to be some problems that come out of this. And a lot of the impact is kind of predicated on what governments are doing and that type of thing. And so there's a lack of control on that end of it. And so we were really focused on what can we do to help our clients? What do our clients need to focus on? How do we need to reach out to them to help them through this time? And so we took some time that week to decide. We basically went through each client and said, okay, this client, they just need to continue what they're doing. Right. This client, we need to change strategies, or this client, we need to change, you know, maybe the tactics don't need to change, but the messaging certainly needs to change.
Was that based on any of the data that you were seeing already? Like, did you look at anything specific to make that call? Or was it just, I mean, I guess it's because you know them very well. So was it just based on sort of, like, what was it based on? I guess that's the question.
Yeah, I think it was based on, one, it was based on knowing our clients. I think that was probably the primary thing, you know, right. Because some of our clients are definitely more focused on organic messaging, and some are focused more on, you know, no matter what's happening, let's figure out a way to grow our business without being insensitive, obviously. But you know, so each client has a little bit of a different personality. But yeah, I mean, we have some clients that they sell soap online. We have some clients that sell telecommunication tools that help you have better Wi-Fi connections. So we knew going in that some of our clients were going to have opportunities that others weren't. And so that certainly impacted the strategy as well. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we were just kind of paying attention to what was happening. Most of our clients are actually, yeah, all of our clients are in North America. And so we were paying attention to what was happening in China, and then in South Korea, and obviously in Italy, to kind of, you know, stay aware of what the trend was looking like. And so we kind of shifted as that shifted as well.
I think that's really smart. You essentially just didn't reach out immediately, from what it sounds like. You just like process things a little bit, and you try to make a sort of an assessment of where each client was going to go. And then you sort of made some suggestions accordingly. And I guess that's something which anyone listening in right now can already do, right? And I guess they also have the benefit of already having some data on what the impact is.
Yeah, I think that that's one place where the businesses who are in countries that haven't been as impacted as China, or, you know, we're a couple of weeks behind Italy, certainly that would be how I would describe the United States right now. You know, seeing what happened in Italy has certainly helped inform the decisions that we're making for clients and the recommendations that we're making to clients, as well as, you know, what we're doing ourselves and what the decisions I'm making for my business.
Sure. And just like you said, I think it really depends on what kind of business you're in, right? Like, at least from the conversations I've been having, it sounds like you've kind of have three major groups, if you will. You've got this first group that's actually going to benefit from this. That's a good word to use, where, you know, your products are just somehow perfectly aligned with what people want. So health goods, food, maybe something to do with helping people get their home office set up. Like, they're just sort of right in the crossroads, or right in the bullseye, rather, of products that people want. Then you've got this other segment that maybe kind of has some benefit, but not much. And then you've got this other one, potentially like luxury products and things like that, where I think the demand is just really dropped. So I'm assuming that, you know, from a social media perspective, you're going to have a very different thought process around these three segments, right? Or do you have any other segments that you think I've missed?
No, I think that's a good way to summarize the e-commerce segments, certainly. So I think that that's a fair summary of that. And yeah, they each have, you know, they all three kind of have different strategies and how to move through this pandemic and this crisis. The thing that we've tried to focus our clients on is, okay, this horrible thing is happening. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to be on the other side of it? Because, you know, if you start planning that now and we start looking at what we can do in terms of marketing your business, we can help guide you from right now to do as much as we can to help you get on the other side of this in the best position you can be in.
Okay. And so what does that other side look like? I think that's sort of like a question that everybody is thinking. I've spoken to some people who have a negative view, some people who had a very positive view. I'm curious, like, how do you see is there a light at the end of the tunnel, Julie?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, okay, I think, you know, you kind of have to have that. And part of me, yeah. I'm kind of a natural optimist as well. So
that's good.
You know, definitely remember that. But I think that it kind of aligns with the three categories you just laid out. So the businesses that have an opportunity here, they actually have an opportunity to thrive through this and you know, at least maintain, if not do more business, if they have positioned themselves in a smart way and they've made sure they have enough stock and product and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's that, you know, you have an opportunity to thrive. Then I think you have the kind of mid-range products that have to get creative, but they do have the opportunity to just kind of remain stable through this, depending again on, you know, who their typical customer is and all of those types of things. But I think you have a set of e-commerce brands that have an opportunity to remain stable. And then I think, you know, you do have the luxury brand that is selling something that is, you know, costs quite a bit of money, that I think their goal is going to be to survive this. Mm-hmm. And I think that there are creative ways that they can potentially do that as they're moving through. But the one thing to remember about luxury brands is usually the people they're selling to usually have income. You know, it's not as impacted by types of, you know, this type of thing, like a recession or whatever we end up going through here. It's you know, they're not as worried about, their customers aren't as worried about things like unemployment, or, you know, they have various sources of income that are going to get them through this. So that market actually has, while they may just survive through this, they will probably be the ones that rebound the quickest, because their target audience will be the ones that probably spend money before, you know, some of the other target audiences do.
Right. So would you say that, you know, if you take these three segments, I guess your social media or your marketing strategy would then sort of go from short term to more long term as you go through each stage, right? I guess like if you're in, say, state category A where you've got immediate demand, then you have to do something with your social media right now. Whereas mm-hmm. say with somebody else who's seen the on category B where your sales are kind of dropping, maybe you can take a medium term approach where you have to get creative with your products and things like that. And maybe the luxury one, you're really just aiming for that time when the rebound happens, and like any sales that you get in the meantime is good. Is that how you guys are thinking about it? Or like, what's your advice right now for clients in these three segments?
Yeah, so our first piece of advice, and this actually was true across all of our clients, no matter, you know, because we do actually have some clients that aren't in e-commerce, but for all of our clients, the one piece of blanketed advice we gave was focus on your current and former customers first. Mm-hmm. Because those are the people who already know your brand. Those are the people who, when you reach out to them and you say, you know, you have a message like support small business, or, you know, we've really appreciated your support over the years, help us get through this. They are the ones who are going to buy something from you before somebody who has no idea what your brand is. So our blanketed advice, our first piece of advice was to focus on your existing and former customers to work with them and try to create a campaign around them first, because like I said, they're the ones that are going to spend money with you before somebody who has no idea. And then on the
let's dive into that a little bit, because I think that's a really good piece of advice. Can you like, do you have any sort of like specific examples that you ran where, so say someone's listening in right now and thinking, hey, that's a great idea, I've got an email list lying around with, I don't know, 1,000 people, what should I do? Like, so do you have any suggestions on, because you don't want to just email saying, hey, please buy from me, right? Like, you probably need something with an authentic voice. So, you know, how did you go about like advising your clients on how to craft that message and story to you know what I mean? Like, what would you tell someone listening?
Yes. Yeah, so the first thing you have to realize is have situational awareness. You know, you don't want to totally ignore the pandemic. I have actually gotten emails from companies where it seems like they have no idea what's going on in the world. So you don't want to be that company. So you have to just be very aware and have, you know, the right tone and the right content you're sending out. So when you are doing this, so, and it depends on the customer, right? So we have some clients that actually do sell things like soap. And so there was a natural message there, especially the first week that everything kind of really got, you know, the media was, I mean, it was just really, that's all anybody was talking about. And it was, people were scared and people were going to the store and buying, you know, all the soap, all the hand sanitizer, all of that. And so for those companies, it made sense to say, okay, let's send an email out and ask your best customers to buy some soap to support you, you know, and try not to, there's a balance between seizing the opportunity and being overly opportunistic. And so that's the message, that's the line you have to walk with us. And we've had some clients say, you know, I don't want to send that email. And, you know, we respect that, of course. But the clients who did send an email out like that did get a bump in sales. And so, you know, it was getting their product, obviously, first and foremost, helping with cash flow. And then, you know, just staying in front of those long-term customers. So that's kind of step one. And then behind that, what we were doing and what we continue to do is working within some of the social ad platforms to build not only on that existing email list, but also build lookalike audiences and things along those lines to run ads to help our clients stay out in front of the you know, their target customers.
Sure. And I think that, so for instance, if you take that soap company, I guess the copy on that email is critical, right? You know, just to hit that line of not being too opportunistic and also just recognizing that there is a good fit here. If you're looking at it also from the ads perspective, I suppose it's the same challenge, right? So you're trying to get a good message out, but you have to be very careful to be sensitive to the issue that, you know, the pandemic, you don't want to seem like you're just, you know, being very greedy.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. And it's, you know, you throw in the additional layer of client brand and voice, mm-hmm. whereas, you know, so we have actually two clients that sell soap, but their brand voices could not be more different. And so one client, her brand voice and brand message, something along the lines of "wash your damn hands," made sense for her clientele. I mean, it made sense for her, right. And it worked for her. Like, she had great success running that. Right. For the other client, that message would not have worked at all. Right. And so, right. Not only do you have all those things that you listed off, but you also have to consider, okay, well, if we're reaching out to their existing customers and their best customers and their former customers, they also have to feel like it's authentic to the brand, because that is going to be, that's going to be the thing that actually makes them purchase, is when it checks all those boxes and is authentic to the brand that they want to support. And so that's also a piece of this messaging that you have to make sure. It can't just be the blanketed support small business, please buy something from us, here's a discount code. It's also got to come out from that brand voice perspective.
And did you, you know, was there any advice like it should go out from the founder and be sort of like a personal message from them? Or did you, is that not great? You know, how important do you think that is?
Again, it really depends on the brand. So we have some that aren't like that at all. And mm-hmm. it's more from the brand's perspective, a brand voice, you know, not necessarily one individual person. And then we have some clients where the founder is very close to her community or his community. And really, you know, it made sense to sign it with their name and written in the first person. So I don't think that I don't think there's a right answer to that. I think it depends on what you've done all along. And that's one of those places where, you know, you don't necessarily want to change it, at least for the first email, you know, or first or second email. Now, if you get into it, if we go down this path and it makes sense for a message to come out from the founder, then, you know, we would do that. But I am not yet at the place where it makes sense to completely change how the brand speaks to its customers.
So I guess, you know, from everything I'm hearing, it sounds like we're telling small businesses, saying, hey, this is not a time to just change everything you've been doing. So whatever you've been doing, do that, but just be empathetic with your message, right?
Yes, I think that's really the gist of what we're recommending. I mean, we have certainly changed streams for some of our clients, you know, some of them where, you know, they're not selling soap. Maybe they're selling clothing, for example, or, you know, they're selling something that isn't going to be in high demand right now or isn't going to be top of mind. We are, you know, some of the strategies there, it does make sense to shift them somewhat. So if they typically rely on email and email isn't working, then maybe we need to look at Facebook marketing, or maybe we need to look at PR, or maybe we need to work on link building for later on to help you kind of, you know, survive through this so that you can thrive on the other side of it.
Right. Have you seen any clients trying to, or rather getting creative with their product portfolio, where they've maybe changed something to better fit what people are sort of demanding right now?
So we haven't had any clients really do that yet. I actually have seen several companies start to make hand sanitizer, which is, you know, a prized commodity here right now in the United States. So I've seen companies do that. And I have seen some interesting things with some of the other, you know, some of the other things that people can't get in stores. I've seen some e-commerce businesses transition and make a substitute item or that item really quickly. So that's been a really interesting piece of that creativity and quite honestly, that's something that gives me a lot of hope in this, is the creativity that's coming out of this pandemic. Is just some of the things that these business owners are doing is really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, this isn't, one thing I saw being shared around was this supermarket that how people were hoarding all the hand sanitizers, right? So they did something really smart with their pricing. So they did something like, I'm sure I'm getting the numbers wrong, but something like if you buy one hand sanitizer, it's $1, but if you buy two, it's 100. So I thought that was like very creative, just to make sure that only one person actually just gets one. Because usually supermarkets are the other way around, right?
Yeah, and so things like that, I mean, even extending beyond the traditional e-commerce, what you see is really a lot of companies getting very creative about becoming an e-commerce or at least having an e-commerce element to their business. So I'm helping a local business owner here. He owns a basically a it's a local watering hole where you can go and you have a beer or wine with your friends, and he's actually starting to deliver wine, and he's got this drop off. He's building this service where you can bring in your growlers and get beer filled into them, and then you take them home, and it's like totally no, there's no contact. You pay online, you bring in your growlers, the company takes them in, fills them, and then puts them back out, and then you take them from there. And so, and all of that is being paid for online. And so what you're seeing is it's really an interesting time because you're seeing companies that you wouldn't traditionally consider an e-commerce turning into an e-commerce just to, survive through this time.
Yeah, and I mean that's why I think it's like that light at the end of the tunnel conversation we had about, how this recovery is going to look like. I think overall it's a pretty positive outlook for e-commerce, right? The tough part is this sort of waiting period now to see how long everyone's going to be on lockdown and how long the uncertainty is going to be there. But it's pretty clear that online is going to be the way, I guess more people are going to be shopping online post-crisis than pre. Would you agree?
I would agree. I think this is probably going to change how, it's definitely going to change how the world works, I think, and just in general. So I think you're going to have even more people after this, long after this is done, shopping, working from home and being home more and shopping online more and having things delivered to their house. I think you're going to see people who maybe before this weren't necessarily the most comfortable just ordering, for example, clothing online or shoes online. You're going to see that increase, and so there's going to be a bigger comfort level with that because that's the only option we have right now is to shop for those things online.
I mean, I think that's a really good point because everyone's sort of at home and behavior is definitely changing. For instance, I had a conversation a while back where we were talking about how the shift from desktop to mobile has kind of reversed now because everyone's at home. They're kind of spending more time on their computers versus mobile. So I'm curious about social media. Are you seeing anything like that where it's sort of like a surprising change from what was there pre-crisis?
I think that what I've seen is, and I think that Facebook is doing a pretty good job at, I think they've done some things to their algorithm during this time because I think that they're showing more relevant content. I have seen a dramatic increase in people starting Facebook groups. And so I think that because people need to, feel like they have a connection somewhere to someone, to something. And so I've seen a lot of Facebook groups started, and I don't know how, I don't know what the long term of this is, but I do know that people who have told me privately in conversations that they hate Facebook or they hate Instagram, they are all over it now. So they are on those channels a lot because I think that that's how one of the main ways we're connecting. And so I think that we might see more social media usage continue after this because I think people are kind of returning to that and getting reacclimated to those platforms.
Yeah, I mean,
So we'll just see how that plays out.
Like, I think, I don't remember which year, but there was this pivotal moment where Facebook sort of switched from totally organic content to preferring much more like paid content, right? And then you see a lot of Facebook pages seeing, you know, with 100,000 likes or whatever, but seeing very little engagement. Do you think that, you know, with that algorithm change you just talked about, is it like showing more organic content as well? So not just groups, but say from pages, have you seen anything like that?
I don't think that has changed that much. I think that I will say that some of the ads that we're running for clients right now, they were having lower cost per clicks or lower CPC, whatever the action is that we're trying to get people to take. I'm seeing lower cost per action on those channels. And so that might be an indicator that Facebook's algorithm is favoring pages a little bit more right now. But I will say, you know, that algorithm shift where the Facebook organic content just kind of tanked for most pages, I don't ever see us returning to even
the good old days.
What that was. But I do think that people, because there's more demand. So it's based on kind of a bidding system. And so if there's more demand, then the price is going to be more cost effective to get the clicks that you're looking to get.
Yeah, because I guess there's more inventory right now, right? With more eyeballs, then there's way more times that your ad could show. So I guess as the supply is going up, that's what's causing the price to come down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. So yeah, I think we'll just kind of have to see how that plays out. But at least right now, running ads on Facebook seems to be a little bit more cost effective than it was even a month ago.
So essentially, the usual suspects like Facebook, Instagram is actually seeing a boom. Would that be fair to say in terms of efficacy?
Yes. Yeah, because that's where people are. So that's where your advertisers are going to go. So yeah, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, like let's say we've got a small business and, you know, I think everyone's always thinking that their marketing is not that great. Well, I don't want to say everyone, but like I'm sure people are thinking that, hey, there's a lot more that we could be doing. So would you recommend that, say, if you have a small business, that they focus on one of these channels and try to do a good job there? Or are you sort of a fan of sort of doing it across multiple channels like Facebook, Instagram, Pinterest, what have you? How do you sort of approach that?
I'm first and foremost, I'm a fan of focusing on what has worked for you as a trend, because just because this is all going on right now doesn't necessarily mean that's going to change. I'm also a fan of focusing on, you know, maybe like two channels at a time, and then you can spread yourself too thin. Now, if you have a large budget and you can, you know, accommodate advertising on multiple channels, go at it. But most small businesses don't. And so I think that you focus on what has worked, and you get really, really smart about what your messaging is and who you target. And I cannot emphasize this enough. You have to start with your past customers or your existing customers and build off of that. And I think the reason that, you know, Facebook is such a great tool is its ability to build lookalike audiences from an email list, or lookalike audiences from, you know, page likes, or there's a lot of different ways you can do that. And then you have this ability to advertise to people who look like your best customers on Facebook and Instagram, and, you know, some of their other channels where you can do display ads. So I think you have to start with what worked. And then if you're working on that, really trying to, you know, make email work or whatever it is, and it's not working for you, then yeah, you have to start looking at something else. But again, you always need to consider who your best customers are and really try to figure out a way to advertise to them in a way that, you know, makes sense and is the right tone. And then second best to that is advertising to people who look like your best customer.
Right. I love that guideline you just put out saying, you know, focus on two channels. I mean, I am personally guilty of the same thing as well. You know, as soon as we started, we just went and created a Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. And I think, I don't know when the last time I tweeted from a Twitter handle is, and that just makes you look bad, right? And I think there's a lot of FOMO out there, especially with small business. So I think that's, you know, if anyone, you know, for if you take anything away from this, I'd say that's a really good point to take. If you are looking at marketing, just pick the two which are working well for you and focus on those, right?
Yes. And now is definitely not the time to try to do everything. So, yeah. You know, you are, most small businesses are looking at, especially e-commerce, you know, you're looking at potential disruptions in your production or in your supply chain. You're looking at, depending on, you know, if you sell on Amazon, there are shipping delays there, which can, you know, unfortunately you have no control over, but mm-hmm. can negatively impact your business. And so I think that you already, there's so many other things going on in your world that if you try to sit down and say, okay, if you're not already doing certain, if you're not already active on certain channels, now you're certainly, if you're active on all of these channels, then, you know, remain active if you can, but now is not the time to say, okay, I think Pinterest is a great thing to start right now. It might be, yeah. But I mean, has it ever worked for you? Well, you don't know because you've never used it. So focus on what has worked.
Yes. Yes. I like that. I'm trying to think a little bit now about, you know, the companies we talked about who are brick and mortar, who are just coming online. Right. So I guess they've got a bit more of a blank slate, if you will. I guess some of them are already on Facebook, but would you change your advice at all to someone like that who's got a bit more of a clean slate coming in? So I do know that besides the usual suspects, there are like some new up and coming ones like TikTok and things like that. Would you advise that? Are there any ones like that that you think are interesting that if someone has the time, they could probably explore, or would you have the same advice for them too?
Yeah, I mean, most likely, unless they've started their business in the last, you know, within the last 12 months, they've probably figured out an established marketing channel. Mm-hmm. Let's just say you've started your business and you're still figuring out like how to run a business and some of those things. I think that it depends on where you're. If you don't have, you know, great customers yet, or you haven't really found, you know, hit your stride in terms of who your customers are, it's going to depend on where your ideal customer hangs out. So, you know, if your ideal customer is between 18 and 24, yeah, certainly go over to TikTok and play around with that and see what happens over there. So it just that the answer to that question is going to be dictated by where your customer hangs out more than anything else. If you're trying to start a new, if you're starting a new marketing channel,
right,
that's going to depend on that.
And do you put any emphasis at all onto the skill level of the customer too? Like, for instance, if you've got someone who's never used TikTok in their lives, I suppose that's also another sort of thing to think about if you are thinking of getting on it, right?
Yeah. So if you are, I think that the demographic though of the social channels kind of falls in line with skill level as well. But certainly if you are, you know, one good distinction that I would make is between Facebook and Instagram. So Facebook, and this is just a very simple distinction, but Facebook, part of the reason it works is people can put links onto Facebook where then you can go and read more about something else or watch a video, or, you know, you can go and take a poll or, you know, get that coupon code or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. You can't do that from an advertiser and a marketer's point of view. You can't really do that on Instagram without advertisements. Mm-hmm. And so if your audience is the type of audience who wants to read more or wants to watch more and is okay leaving the native social platform. So if they're okay leaving Facebook, for example, which that's going to tend to be a little bit of an older audience, then, you know, you kind of think through like what the features are of the social channel and what your audience wants. So you kind of on the flip side of that, Instagram tends to be a little bit younger. I mean, it's, you know, the older population on there is growing as well, but, you know, people go on Instagram and plan to have their entire experience from within Instagram. And right. so if that's what your audience wants, then it would make sense to be more focused on Instagram right now. So I think that age doesn't really, age and how somebody uses a platform, they do tend to right. go together. If okay. you look at it from that perspective, and you just have to be smart about where, you know, which platform you're going to advertise on or which platform you're going to market on.
Sure. And you know, the reason I was asking that is because as companies tend to grow, I think this is one of the areas that they definitely look to outsource, where they want someone to help manage their social media. So obviously one of the options is to work with people like you. But let's say that they also, maybe you've got this other school of thought that people want to actually hire someone in-house. Do you have any advice on what someone should look for when making a hire, whether it's an expert like yourself, like an outsourced consultancy or like an employee? How would you advise a store owner, and like what qualities should they look for?
So one of the reasons companies hire, you know, a company like mine or, you know, a freelancer who might be very, very experienced in social media is that experience. And also we typically come with a set of tools. So that's one mistake I do see businesses make when they decide to hire a social media person in-house. Mm-hmm. The very first question that social media in-house hire is going to ask you is, okay, what software are we using? Which that's, you know, that can be thousands of dollars a year, depending on what software you use. And then the second question they're going to ask their new employer is, what's our advertising budget? Or what's our influencer budget?
Sure.
And so I think that is, you know, and that's, and I'll address your question in a second, but that is something that when you are kind of looking at that decision, I've seen a lot of companies just not even consider that when they're hiring social media or any kind of really digital marketing person in-house. So the reason a company typically hires and outsources is they're looking for, first of all, they don't want an employee. They don't want to have to manage somebody. They want somebody who has experience working in various industries or with, you know, several different types of companies in your industry. Somebody who has that, it's really about experience and the skill set that somebody brings in right away. So if you're looking to ramp up quickly and get something going quickly, outsourcing is usually the best way to go, whether that's to, you know, a freelancer or an agency, whatever you decide to do. If you're looking to, you know, if your company can support an employee long term, mm-hmm. and you really want, let's say you have a lot of, if it's content heavy, like if you need somebody on the ground taking pictures, taking videos, interviewing people in the office or interviewing people in the work, you know, on the floor, that's when it kind of makes more sense to have somebody in-house when you are at the point of having the access to and the ability to kind of capture all of this great content and tell this story. So, you know, assuming you have the money to hire somebody and have an employee, that's when it makes sense to bring somebody in, is when you are at the point where you have, you know, something that where somebody needs to be on the ground at work capturing all of this information and all of this great content.
So I'm trying to link that with, you know, what we talked about earlier, right, in terms of demographics, and trying to link that with the channel. So, you know, for instance, if someone decides that, look, my customers are all on, I don't know, TikTok, and I'm a lot older, is that something which someone should consider, whether it's, you know, with an agency, am I able to access someone who can work on my channels, who's sort of in that demographic, who feels the same pain as my customers do? Is that something which is should be a strong consideration, or that doesn't really matter?
I think experience using social channels is more important than that. And I'll tell you why. You have to. So it's great if a hire or somebody that, you know, you might be considering, you know, outsourcing work to has experience on a channel. But I've seen time and time again where that model fails, because the employee or the person you're hiring doesn't have experience or doesn't have a lot of experience representing a brand. So they don't have that marketing skill. They don't have that business acumen that's needed to, you know, to basically to translate and go through that filter of take the education and the experience that, you know, I have personally, for example, using TikTok, but also through that filter, you have to put, you know, the business message, the brand message, the voice, the tone, all of that. And that right. is the skill that is often missed. And I've seen that. I've seen companies do that. And I've seen it go really wrong because the person running the social media, they just don't get the business. They don't get the business side of it.
Right, right. So I guess it's something like, yes, you might have somebody who uses this channel day to day for their own personal use. But if you don't have that core business or marketing acumen, then it's probably not going to be a very good hire.
I would say that's a pretty good way to summarize it. You have to have somebody who has experience using social, I think, to experience using various social platforms for the purpose of advertising, marketing, promoting yeah. a company, a brand, because without that, what happens is the person who's running the brand social media, it just sounds like that person talking.
Yes.
And that's what, you know, that's what most of the time you want to avoid. Now, if there's good alignment there, then it might work. I think a better way around that is to work with influencers because mm-hmm. then, you know, the influencer, they're going to be talking to, you know, the people that, you know, their followers, the way that they typically do talk to their followers and promoting your brand. And so you kind of get a good bang for your buck there because they are, you know, promoting your brand in the way that you want them to, but you're also getting that added value of the influencer really knowing how to use a tool. And so if you are looking at getting onto TikTok, for example, going the influencer marketing route, at least mm-hmm. for the first few campaigns, probably makes a lot more sense than hiring somebody in that age demographic of users to run your social media for you.
Yeah, and I guess it's like a very quick way of getting probably the most channel specific a campaign that's going to work because you're doing it with an influencer who really knows their way around. And then I guess once that's done, you could try to replicate that with, you know, yourself or an agency, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can, there's so many ways you can approach all of these different social channels. I have certainly, you know, so when I started doing social media professionally, Facebook and LinkedIn weren't even out yet. I was using MySpace. And I can tell you that my experience with MySpace has continued to benefit me, even though MySpace is still out there, but nobody really ever uses it anymore.
Sure.
But it's been the same thing. So like my experience with Facebook has benefited how we use Instagram. Our experience with Twitter has benefited how we use some of Pinterest, you know, with there's this kind of building of knowledge from network to network. And even though all of these social networks are different, knowing the ins and outs of how they work and how they kind of build on each other is something that's really valuable for companies.
Julie, this has been very, very interesting. Thank you very much. I think I really enjoyed that you've got such a positive outlook on what's going to happen. And I think especially on the social media space, given that so many people are at home, it's something I think anyone who's listening in should really think about to make the best use of that and try to really think about the social media campaigns. I'm sure people would love to get in touch with you just to see if they can get more of your advice and hopefully connect with you even further. So how would you recommend that they get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I would recommend going to our website, which I'm sure you will put in the write-up there somewhere, but mm-hmm. it is, just so you all have it, it's besmartsocialmedia.com, and the B has two E's. So it's B as in boy, E-E, smartsocialmedia.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Julie.
Thank you. Happy to be on.
You're still here, which means you definitely enjoyed that conversation. This is a special COVID-19 e-commerce mini-series to help small business merchants out there get prepared. We're doing a lot more of these, so be the first to know whenever there's a new episode. Just follow DataCue, that's DataCue, on Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. Stay safe out there, everybody. Till next time, this is Sharam.